So how would you compare Tabula Rasa to the other two previous Bloodbound albums that you've released so far?
Well, I guess the two previous albums that we've done is basically old school heavy metal. Really, like you can hear a lot of our old influences, like Iron Maiden and Halloween, Judas Priest, and that sort of you know, European kind of heavy metal. And I think the new album is a little bit different. We're trying to put some of our newer influences into it. Like we listen to some of the band members even listen to, you know, like Slipknot or Sugar, In Flames, and mm-hmm. that sort of style. So I think you can hear some new influences on the new album as well. It's like a more modern production, and we're trying to do something a little bit more original, I think. Let's try to find our own sound a little bit more.
What's the significance of the name Tabula Rasa? Why did you name the album Tabula Rasa, and is there some kind of concept behind it?
Yeah, it's like the Tabula Rasa means like an unscribed tablet, or like a clean slate.
Mm-hmm.
So the songs are written around that concept. So the lyrics are you know, like you as a person, you're born. You're more. It's a bit difficult to describe. Like your heritage. It's not as important as your surroundings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and as well like a clean slate, Urban is getting back into the band, and he thought it would be a cool concept as well, because we're kind of starting over with him again. So it's, like a clean slate for the band.
Thomas, you originally had Urban Breed singing on the first album, and then you had Michael Borman on a second, and then you ended up getting Urban Breed back to record a third album. And how did you get him back in the band, and why did you decide to take him back and let Michael Borman go out of the band?
Yeah, when we finished the first album, Nosferatu, we just went out playing, like on tour playing, and then Urban had this long-planned solo project mm-hmm. with small friends of his that he really wanted to do, and he decided that he wanted to finish that project. And we had, you know, we had a record label that wanted a new album, and we didn't want to wait for, you know, ages to make a second album. So it kind of turned out that we contacted Michael to do the vocals on the second album.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the second album was released, we got a lot of gigs, and Michael didn't work out with his busy schedule. He's got his own studio and he lives in Germany, so it costs us a lot of money to, you know, to fly him to the gigs and stuff. So we asked Urban to like fill in for him on the live gigs after the Book of the Dead album, and eventually he finished his solo project, and he just felt natural. He just got into the band again, and we started over.
So is that kind of a significance of naming the album what you named it? You know,
I think it's it kind of reflects the history of the band.
Your previous two albums, The Book of the Dead and Nosferatu, were not released in the U.S. And why were they not released over here? And they're still pretty hard to find, but you do have the new album now available in the USA called Tabula Rasa, obviously, and you can get it online in some stores, etc., etc. But, you know, why were these previous two albums never released over here? Because I'll tell you what, I think they're pretty good.
Well, it's we released our first two albums on a German label called Metal Heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And he only had distribution, the label only had distribution in parts of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a small label, and we got distribution in Japan and South America and Russia, but U.S. seems was a problem for the label to get distribution over there. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to change labels as well, like we've done now. We have a new label for this album. It's called Blistering Records.
Mm-hmm.
They have they're working with Inside Out as well. So it's released in a lot more countries and in the U.S. So it's really good for us, because a lot of people has asked us, you know, about why don't you release the album in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of mails that people can't find it in stores in the U.S. and
mm-hmm. Unless you import
hopefully it will be a little bit better now.
Yeah.
Has there been any response from anybody in the USA to the album's release, and any critical response, any fan mails? Have you had any response from the U.S. about the new album?
No, we haven't heard that much, really. It's we've been on tour, so just got back like a few days ago. So we don't really know much about the response from the album, really. Just the response we got from playing a couple of new songs on tour live.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know much, really. I just started to find some reviews on the internet, so it's going to be interesting to see what people think of the album, because it's quite different from, even though you can still hear it's Bloodbound, it's quite heavier and
mm-hmm.
a bit different from the two previous.
Being a newer band in the scene, how did this band come together, and how did you find these guys and form Bloodbound?
Me and Frederick, the keyboard player, we've been playing on and off since maybe, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. We started to play together, and we've been in a band called Street Talk. It's a more AOR kind of softer style of music, and we wanted to start a metal band, because that's what we listened to when we grew up, you know, with all the 80s bands, the metal 80s bands, Maiden and Metallica and AC/DC and all those bands.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to put together a metal band, and so we just started to look around for a singer, and we knew Urban from before as well, and he doesn't live that far from where we live in Sweden, so we contacted him, and he just came over and tried to, and he sang on a couple of songs, and we felt that could be something really good, and so we put out a demo and sent it to a couple of labels, and yeah, we had a good response on that demo, so
mm-hmm.
we kind of felt like this is something we should go for, and I guess that's how it turned out that we started.
You produced a new album by yourselves, and what's it like to produce an album by yourself as opposed to having an actual producer with you in a studio to produce the record?
Well, I think that if you want to have someone else to produce your album, it has to be someone who's really good, and usually a really good producer costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that's probably the main reason why bands, at least, you know, well-known bands, of course, that make a lot of money, they can have producers, but if you're not so well-known, and to get a crap producer, and it's better to do it yourself if you can do it better, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just, I think the mixing process and the sound engineer is maybe even more, you know, crucial to the final result. If you know what you want on an album, like you have a goal, it's then I think you can do it yourself if you...
There's a lot of great metal bands coming out of Sweden, and what's the metal scene like over there? Is it pretty big?
Yeah, definitely. It's a big metal scene. Yeah, it is. Especially a lot of you know, a lot of new bands are popping up, a lot of musicians here, so yeah, it's quite big.
What kind of equipment do you use to play live and in the studio?
Well, I used to play Ibanez. I really like Ibanez. I started out playing an RG model, and I was really into them for a long time. But then I tried an ESP, I don't know, a couple of years ago or something, and I just felt that, you know, you have the same player, the same playability. It's really good to play, and I think some of the ESP models are a bit cooler, you know, cooler looking. Ibanez guitar is very good to play, but they're a bit boring, I think, mm-hmm. when it comes to how they look. So I started to look around for ESP guitars and tried a couple of them, and we actually got an endorsement from ESP just 6 months ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I only play ESP now. I use an SV. It's like a Randy Rhoads model.
Kind of like a flying V type thing?
It's like a flying V, but with one of the... with a short... what do you say? Like a one long wing and one short wing.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so it's a Randy Rhoads model. So it's that's a cool guitar. And I also use an Eclipse, like the Les Paul model ESP,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty good as well. Like with the Floyd Rose, I like the Floyd Rose bridge. And I've had quite a few guitar amps. I've used modified Marshalls and a Rivera I had a long time ago, and but now I only have a Line 6 head, which is not that good really, but I'm going to get a new one as soon as I get some money. it's good enough, you know, for playing live, and
yeah,
and also I got this kind of what do you call it, like a floor pod,
mm-hmm.
like an X3 Live, I think it's called.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. You could just bring it in like a little briefcase and just mm-hmm. put it on the stage and plug it in, and it sounds pretty good.
I notice a lot of people use Line 6 stuff for live performances now. Nowadays, because it's small and compact.
Yeah, that's on tour now. We used you know, Pod Pros,
mm-hmm.
and just the floorboard, and it's so easy to, especially if you're a support band and you don't have much time to on stage, you know, to set up your gears and stuff. So it's just so much easier to use Line 6 stuff. But still, you can tell it's like, it's not as good, and you don't have the same, if you have a good amp on stage, you can, I think you actually play better as well when you can hear your tone from a nice amp just behind your back.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like getting your sound from the monitors straight up in your face. It's not so good. It's okay, but... Yeah, I prefer an amp on stage, really.
What's your opinion about downloading in general? Does illegal downloading, legal downloading, whatever, you know, back in the day, you and I grew up with vinyl, cassettes, and CDs as well. But what's it like nowadays? And what do you think about it?
Well, it's, first of all, I think that, you know, it's something that you can't really stop now, so you have to do something. Try something new, like you said, like if you can get some kind of system where people can pay when they download. So if that would work, it would be really good. And of course, you know, the illegal download, I don't see how it's gonna stop, because if you can get something for free instead of, you know, paying for it, I think it's going to be really difficult, I think, to work this one out.
Do you think that metal bands suffer less from the downloading squeeze?
I think it seems like metal fans seems a bit more hardcore fans when it comes to, you know, buying albums. But I'm not really sure, but that's the feeling I get. And, you know, a lot of metal heads still buy albums, and they want to have the albums, and they want to look at the albums. They're really into, you know, the band and the music. Then they're not just the typical listener that turns on the radio and, oh, now it's the hit single for the week, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it should be... I think it is a little bit better for metal bands, but still, you can really tell that bands are not selling that many records anymore.
Do you still have a lot of people coming to, say, live shows?
Yeah, that's one of the things as well that I think a lot of new bands are gonna take a greater hit, because, you know, some bands that have already worked up, you know, they started a bit before, you know, the whole downloading got really big, and they got an audience, and they can go out and play live and make some money on, you know, merchandise or selling maybe albums, you know, on tour live. So it's going to be difficult for new bands, I think, that if they want to reach out, it's going to be very difficult, I think. And we're just in kind of in between, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully we can, you know, we still feel now that we can, you know, we can play live and quite a lot of people show up, and we're starting to get a little bit bigger. But, you know, for new bands, it's very difficult.
You just did a tour with Hammerfall and Sabaton, and how did that tour go? And what was the reception like for you?
Well, that was actually very good. It was an amazing tour, I think. We were really lucky to get on that tour, and we mainly played Eastern European countries. And just before we got on the tour, Hammerfall and Sabaton had gone on the Western European leg as well, played, you know, Germany and Italy, Spain, and all those countries. And they could also tell that when they came to Eastern Europe, the crowd is so good in the Eastern European countries. Not many bands play there, and they're really, like, into having fun and headbang, and it's a very good crowd. So we had a great time. We started out in Poland and with 3 gigs, and they were totally packed. The gigs were, you know, sold out, and it was really good. The crowd went crazy when we played, so it was fun.